way that you're living your life, the way that you're living your faith. Your children are, they're likely going to be baptized by a man like you, but they're not going to care at all about the faith. They're probably going to think it's silly because everything they're getting from you says silliness on it. You know, you go, you know, it's just like a dress-up thing that you do on Easter and Christmas. It's an event that you go to. They're not understanding what's going on, and they're not understanding it so much that they will have no reason to probably get married in the church, and they will have absolutely no reason to baptize their children. So I ask them, I say, you know, this is good, you know, this is going to happen. So if you're, you know, talk to your ancestors, you know, talk to your great-great-great-grandfather, and he comes up to you and says, your family's not Catholic anymore? Why not? What did you replace it with? What did you give them instead of Jesus? What did you give them instead of God? And answer that, because most men, I mean, what they're replacing it with Netflix and secular culture, I mean, and materialism. And is this really the, you know, the shoulder that you want your children to cry on when tragedy strikes in their life, that this, you're handing them the world, this world that we live in, that's what you're giving them as the foundation of their life? And why don't you just find out what the church teaches before you give it up? I mean, men, your Catholic identity spans generations, centuries, if not thousands of years. Why not find out what the church teaches before you give it up? I mean, how ridiculous is that when you really think about it, that you're going to let this whole faith fade from your grandchildren's lives before you have even taken the time to understand it? And that's really what I want to drive home. And then the essays are really just reinforcement for, you know, 23 happy people, and happy because they have Christ in their life. And if give that to them, you know, give that to them. And if you're not going to give it to them, you should at least know what you're giving up. So
you're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Premium Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie, and I'm interviewing my guest, Taylor Rowley, the author of Because of Our Fathers, which is a collection of 23 Catholics telling about how their fathers led them to Christ. So concerning your introduction, you make one. There's one last point I'd like to touch upon in your introduction before we move on maybe to some of the people who are in the book. And you say that there's this failure. Maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but this is how I'm remembering it. There's this failure in youth ministry. There's all this effort at appealing to the youth, and you know, you have all these parties and all these gatherings and all of these youth festivals and ways of appealing to the youth, but it's not going to do a darn bit of good if, you know, when they go home from those events, they're back in their family element and they've got this sort of religious couch potato dad. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you say it seems counterintuitive, but if we focused our efforts on those dads and getting them back, well, then we grab the family. And I think you point out that's actually sort of the biblical model. I mean, that's the actual divinely revealed model. God works through the intermediaries, frequently patriarchs and heads of families. I mean, we know from the evangelization of nations, frequently, you know, big monarchs, emperors, and so forth were converted, and that would convert an entire country. So why not go family by family by family instead of making this direct appeal to the kids when they're outside of their family element, when it's not going to stick when they go home? So do you have so you wrote this book, I presumably, so that you could put it in the hands of that fellow that you were thinking about and other people like him. That's the goal, right?
That's the goal. Now, what I, you know, how I think that will work, I think, here's my guess. I don't have any statistics on this. I think women will want to read this the most because I think they're going to want to get it into the hands of their
their husbands,
their fiance, or their current husband, and then mothers who know that their young children are losing the faith. That's a guess that I have, but I, you know, other men will obviously be reading the book, and then it's going to have to be through sort of a recommendation process. I mean, the guy that I'm thinking about in my head, he's not buying this book. You know, he's just not. I mean, that's the way it works. You know, we'd love him to pick up Scripture every night and all these other apologetics books, but he's not going to. But a book like this, I can see, you know, I can see a mother or a father giving to their child, you know, who just got engaged, and they know that they're probably not, they're thinking about not getting married in the church, or maybe they did get married in the church, but now their children are born and they're not really getting them baptized, or they're waiting to get them baptized. And I can see this being sort of a good first step to, hey, why don't you just, these are some short stories. You know, this guy, Tyler, makes some points about you know, a family losing the faith. He poses some good questions. So that's how I think it could possibly get in the hands of these types of men, and that's my hope. But your point about the religious education and the youth groups and even Catholic schooling, I mean, that's a major point that I make at the end of my introduction, that we really have to sort of have this paradigm shift in the church here where let me finish my point. This shift in our mindset of, we got to catechize the parents. We have to at least get them to a point where they take it serious enough where they're going to Mass. Otherwise, these kids are going to come home from, you know, their pizza night at youth group, and they're going to see, you know, Dad hasn't talked about Jesus Christ, you know, since the last time he used it, you know, as a profanity.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How is that faith going to be conveyed to him when the best and the most important guy in his life thinks this is silly? Even if Mom is taking him to church, even if Dad is going and being dragged along the way, the message is clear to a son and daughter, and the statistics show this, that the child is just not going to take this seriously. And I think that's kind of, when you look at the, you know, I didn't get into like the psychology of this. I really would at some point love to kind of delve more into the psychology / spirituality of why this sort of works this way. But I think part of it is just, we kind of see Dad as the more serious one, right? We're more afraid of him. He's the disciplinarian. He kind of doesn't do things unless he really wants to do them, you know? So he has sort of carries a more seriousness to his life. And if he's doing it, it's got to be very significant. So I think that's kind of part of it. But they're going to be able to see very clearly if he doesn't take it seriously. And that's going to be, you know, the message is going to be clear that this is not a serious thing. This is like what I think most people think of when they go to Mass, when I see them at Mass, that this is sort of a family event. And this, you know, this could go, you know, into a discussion about the liturgy as well. But this is an event that you go to, like going to like a Boy Scouts meeting, and it's, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth. And the father is going to be the one who carries the message the right way or the wrong way.
Well, one of the things that struck me is you have a nice sort of cross-section of humanity here. Obviously, these are all, I think they're all Americans, but so we're talking about America. But you have a nice cross-section of American society here, and you've got people from different classes and people from different educational backgrounds. And we were talking before about Christopher Cech's dad, who was super educated. And of course, Mary and Jean write about their dad, Charlie Rice, who of course was super educated, Notre Dame professor in law. Yet not all of them were. You know, some of these guys were blue-collar workers, and it's not as if they sat down and lectured to their children. You get the idea that Dr. Rice did, by the way, but right. But some of the others, you know, they were serious about their faith, they prayed, and they just did ordinary, beyond that, they did ordinary dad stuff. And that's one of the other common threads throughout, is they spent time with their children, some of them to the sacrifice of their career. They could have, you know, been at the tip top of their profession. There was a lawyer, I'm forgetting which one, there was a lawyer who he didn't spend all that extra time like the other guys in this cutthroat business. He took necessary time for his family. And he went, the first one that struck me, okay, so John Castillo, as you say, it's kind of a tear tearjerker. You've got three generations of Castillos going on camping trips, and they bring the little guy. I think he's three on his first camping trip, and they take him hunting and all that stuff. So there's all of this what we would call male bonding, but it's male bonding with men who are serious Catholics. And then another thing that fed into the Castillo story, and I'd actually like you to tell the story, that what's the tear-jerking part about that. One of the impressive things about the Castillo story to me is that his dad belonged, I think it was the Knights of Columbus chapter that he belonged to, a council rather, and he was saying how his son was exposed not only to his grandfather, who was a good man, and not only to himself, but to other men who belonged to that Knights Council. And there were a lot of good guys in there. There were service members, there were veterans, there were men who had done a lot of heroic things. And he was constantly hearing them tell, like, war stories and things like that. You know, classical male bonding kinds of things. But it was in a very Catholic context. And this boy at the age of 18 does what? Do you tell it?